Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Words of the Wise podcast, hosted by me, Lexi Maynard. Our mission is to capture the words and wisdom of the world's elderly so that their story and legacy may last forever. Like what we're about? Then be sure to subscribe to receive instant updates on new episodes. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Words of the Wise Podcast, or on Twitter at Words of W Podcast as well. Joining us today for episode number 30, we have Rhys Mann. Rhys's story is quite inspirational, and it was a true honor to be able to interview him and share his story for Words of the Wise. Without further ado, here is Rhys Mann, episode 30.
Hi, my name's Rhys Mann, and I am 52 years old.
All right, and you grew up in Hartford City. What was Hartford City like when you were a kid?
Hartford City was a little bit more booming with different companies in the city. I think several of those have left and departed and either gone closer towards like an interstate companionship where they can, you know, get supplies and vendors in a little bit quicker, but no different than Fort Wayne or Muncie. It's just kind of a struggle for small towns and quite different. We operated a family boarding and grooming business up there for the last 13 to 14 years, but there's not a whole lot of businesses coming in there these days. So it's a little bit quieter for sure than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what did the typical day in your childhood look like?
Yeah. So mom and dad was a state policeman, and mom kind of drove bus and went back and forth with the insurance business. So we also farmed about 100 acres. So Rick and I, that's my brother, 2 years older, we would always have chores for sure. Instead of a cultivator, we were the person that went with our hose to the fields to hoe the weeds out of them. And I think it was more for dad to just keep us busy through the day than it was actually going to get the weeds. So,
yeah.
And then followed up by usually sports in the evening on the summertime. You know, that was probably a standout that I had. I absolutely loved Little League baseball growing up.
And was it only you and your brother, or did you have any other siblings?
Just Rick, my brother. He graduated from Blackford in 1985 and went to Manchester College and was the first ever first team All-American from the university. So, yep, he's had several accomplishments too.
And would you say that you have a favorite childhood memory or anything that sticks out to you in particular?
You know, back to just loving Little League baseball, childhood memories. Now that I am an adult and I know the value of a dollar, I realized that my dad didn't get paid a lot as an Indiana State policeman, and mom drove bus. So I knew that the sacrifices that they made for Rick and I, but we never knew those sacrifices growing up, and we never knew that we had anything that we didn't have that we didn't want. So I think Rick and I came up through a household that valued a good day's work and being honest. And I'm just thankful that mom and dad were who they are because what they provided in us. So best childhood memory is just growing up in my household. I didn't miss a beat of anything. Mm-hmm. And I owe that all to my mom and dad. And to have that opportunity to witness my dad coming home from the state police, working that through the day, and then building houses in the evenings. Yeah. He even built his own house, he and mom, in 9 months, the one that we were raised in. So just the importance of seeing my dad and how hard he worked and the sacrifices that were made and what mom did when dad wasn't there to kind of fill that gap, because she was kind of a multiple parent kind of thing at that point. So I couldn't ask for a better childhood. Absolutely not. I mean, there's not a specific memory that reaches out other than just always, if we wanted to get involved in 4-H, we'd go get some sheep. If we wanted a dog, we'd go get a black lab. If we wanted a cat, we'd always go get a cat.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I wanted a bird for Christmas, and guess what? I got a cockatiel bird. My brother had a dirt bike. So all those things, I couldn't imagine. You know, I hope my kids feel the same way that I felt for my parents as far as being able to give them everything that they need.
Very fortunate. So you graduated from Blackford High School in 1987. What did the typical Saturday night in high school look like for you? How do you spend your time?
You know, back to I guess Rick and I probably didn't want to ask mom and dad for money. We had jobs, and that was helping out dad in the shop, rebuilding wrecked cars. But he went from building houses to building wrecked cars because it was a quicker return on investment. A Saturday night would involve just hanging with a girlfriend. I would always go to probably their house and sit with her mom and dad and watch TV. Mm-hmm. Didn't really get into much of movies or meals or going out. If we do something, it was going to get some ice cream. But other than that, if it wasn't sports, it was hanging with a girlfriend.
And what sports did you play in high school?
Basketball, baseball, and football.
Nice. And do you have any particularly great memories from your time playing sports in high school?
You know, baseball was a pretty successful program at Blackford. Blackford has reduced in enrollment and size over the years. But, you know, in the 70s, they also won the state championship in football. So I was, you know, to dress varsity as a freshman for baseball. I had a really good arm. Didn't really hit that well, but I could throw a baseball through anything. So Coach Cheeseman saw that in me. So that was definitely a highlight, being able to play, you know, 3 years with my brother on the baseball team.
Yeah, that's very special. So as we've been talking about your childhood, I know you talked about how your parents instilled in you the ability to work hard and be honest, but would you say that that is the greatest thing that your parents taught you?
I'd say beyond the hard work was just respecting people and just, you know, in leadership opportunities that we have, even if it's a quarterback on the football field or being a superintendent of a school system, it's just not having other people do something that you wouldn't want to do, you know. And I felt like my job as a superintendent at Delta was to make sure that the teachers had all the resources they needed to provide the proper instruction and educational journey for the students that their families and parents were expecting from us. So instead of making changes, either maybe it was the one-to-one initiative with technology or bringing in Canvas and PowerSchool or whatever the case, I just felt like there needed to be a justification behind that change, but to also realize that there's benefit to it. And it just wasn't somebody hiding behind the title of a desk, just being a power hungry person, you know. And yeah, I think my parents have instilled that in me, that you look at the quality of the person and respect them, and you open a door for an elder and you have high amount of respect for the knowledge and wisdom that they've been through, because that's a lot of years of experiences that they can share for us. So hard work, dedication goes a long way, but also respecting an individual goes even further.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And you went to Franklin College, right?
Yes.
So why did you choose to attend school there?
You know, it was really crazy. I was like, I told you about baseball. Baseball was just my cup of tea. And Pat Quinn, who used to be, I think he was the head coach at Ball State, obviously, but I think he later was an assistant AD and maybe AD. I know your family and your background, your team, but he offered me a half scholarship to come play baseball my sophomore year. I thought that's what I was going to do, you know, go play shortstop. And junior year football, we weren't really that good. And then all of a sudden, my senior year, the coach makes a change and puts me in at quarterback. And I threw for 2,200 yards, more than Jeff George did.
Wow.
It was like, wow, maybe I should look into this, because I really like the hitting, the, you know, back and forth. I love football because, mm-hmm, you know, it's a little bit more aggressive and not so slow paced, you know. Yeah. Football's football, right? So mm-hmm, there was a coach, Red Fought, from Franklin College, it came and visited my receiver that I had, who later went to Butler. But he said, "Who's this guy throwing to you?" As he was watching films in the guidance office, he said, "Get him down here." And I met him. And as soon as I met him, he was a guy I wanted to play for. He was that grandfather. He was that father figure away from home. And he was somebody that says, "How would you like to throw a football 40 to 50 times a game?" And it was like, I need to let Coach Quinn know that I'm not going to go play baseball. I'm going to go play football for Coach Fought. So it was kind of ironic. And I think the Lord's definite hand in my life, those directional focus moments were just ones that were unpredicted, I couldn't have planned, but I have only God to give credit for, and I wouldn't ever change the way things went. I liked football better than baseball. I mean, baseball is pretty much year-round stuff, right? So that's why I went to Franklin. Long story short, sorry about that.
No, that's great. I mean, I'm always interested to see where people end up. So what was your major in college, and why did you choose that major?
I started out going cellular biology until I took some biology courses at a small school, and it was like, oh my, I'm not prepared for this. Yeah. So I changed it to sociology, thinking that if I didn't have a career in football, that I would at least finish with a degree teaching me how to interact with folks in a community, that I could follow my dad's footsteps and either be a state policeman or a conservation officer.
Yeah. So then what led you to then thinking you wanted to be in like education, or like, what was that process like?
You know, so after college, like I was still playing baseball. So the Mets were there, and every now and then I would play third base, shortstop, and then pitch. So when they saw that I was throwing 93 mile an hour, it was like, this guy doesn't even have the right form. Let's see what we can do with him. But I knew also that I wanted to play football. So I hired an agent out of Chicago, and I pursued a few different opportunities, tryout camps, and was finally drafted by the Professional Spring Football League. It was going to be like the World League in the springtime.
Yeah.
And my team that drafted me was Columbia, South Carolina Cougars. And all of a sudden we were at Cocoa Beach, Florida, training in the month of January. And at the end of the third week, a major investor backed out and they said, sorry, guys, the league's not going to go. You're all free to go. So that was a long road trip home.
Yeah.
And I was really struggling because I had showed up at many tryout camps, CFL and the World League, and having pretty good days. And just because I had small school Franklin College on my back, didn't really get a chance, and only playing my senior year in high school. So I realized at that point, driving back from Cocoa Beach, that I was done. So I called my agent and said, thanks, but no thanks. And just by chance, during that same time, and you're going to hear God in all this, I was asked, well, my neighbor, Darryl Rice, was the father, and the son was David Rice, good friend of my brother's. They were in the same class. Well, Darryl, the father, passed away. And I went to the funeral, and at the funeral, I ran into, at that time, the principal at Blackford High School. John Oswalt looked at me and said, what would it take for you to get your guidance counselor degree? Because we're going to have several openings in Blackford. And I never even thought about it. I mean, that was like, wow, that's me getting back into school. I really didn't like school. So I went ahead and did some research, realized that there were going to be a few openings, and applied to IPFW. And honestly, I was low anyway, because I told my agent I'm done with football. And I actually, my first year, did not get accepted. I got the whole rejection letter.
Really?
So the next year I spent working with Dad in the shop, rebuilding wrecked cars, and then got married to Stacy, because I knew that's one thing that was solid in my life that I needed. Mm-hmm. So the second year I hand delivered my application and looked at the director and said, you don't understand. I need this. I need to be a guidance counselor in a school system. I have a lot to offer. And he looked at me and said, if you can maintain a 3.9 grade point average, we'll accept you on a conditional status. And Lexi, I have never gotten those good, that kind of grade. And I don't know how it was, but I graduated with a 4.0 at IPFW and got my master's, and thought, well, what better opportunity than to go and help people and coach a little bit and have your summers off. And that's how I became in education, just because I went to a funeral and a guy looked at me and said, what would you think about being a guidance counselor?
Wow, that's crazy. So then your first job was at Blackford then, I'm assuming?
It was. What are the odds that you have 2 years of complete coursework? So I was working at Simpson Industries in Bluffton, Indiana, and then I was going to IPFW at night. Mm-hmm. And the third year is an internship. And just so happened, Ross Elwood, who's the assistant principal at Delta right now, he was the principal at Montpelier School and said, I've got an opening and I can pay you for your internship. So again, just a God-filled destiny that just all I had to do was apply, and Ross hired me, and we spent several years, I think 11 together at Montpelier School before I went to Delta for the first time.
And then how did you end up at Delta?
Well, probably selfishly, I knew that Ozzy had a little bit of talent with football. Mm-hmm. So I kind of did some research and thought, well, I can go to some places with some good football programs and I can take him along with me because he's just an eighth grader and that athletic eligibility home establishment hasn't been designated yet. Mm-hmm. So I interviewed at Eastbrook. And I interviewed with Don Harmon at Delta Middle School, and Don called before Eastbrook called, and I took that job and was there for 1 year. And then a friend of mine that I played football with and grew up with that was a childhood friend, Shane Robbins, was the superintendent at Monroe Central at the time. He said, hey, I want to bring you on as a director of student services. And because he's in the Army National Guard, he said, I'm going to have to do a deployment to Afghanistan. And I need somebody to fill in while I'm gone. And I'm like, as a superintendent, so guidance counselor from superintendent. So I went to Monroe Central for 1 year as a director of student services and then spent a lot of time with the school board. And then Shane left for his deployment. And I filled in that role, and the board kind of really talked me into going back to class to get my EDS out of Ball State. And Shane came back from his deployment for 1 year. I went back as director of student services for 1 year. And then Shane left for another job. And then they hired me on full time. And then later on in 2015, and, you know, I always had my eyes on Delta's job just because I love my time there in 08, 09 as a guidance counselor. And so what are the odds? I mean, I love being a guidance counselor. I loved working with the youth. I did several DC trips, did several instructional lessons inside the classroom on time management and social interaction skills and that kind of stuff. But what are the odds that someone goes from guidance counselor to superintendent? I mean, that's again, a God thing, because I was never really in charge of my own classroom. I was not an assistant principal, assistant superintendent. I went straight from guidance counseling to superintendency. So God has truly blessed us.
Mm-hmm. And what was your favorite part about working in education and having that job, that ability to have that impact on so many people?
You probably know me well enough that if you envision me as a guidance counselor, you could probably see myself going to homes at night and bellying up to the table of a single mother trying to raise a few kids, and their kids' behavior were out of whack. And I would put together a behavioral plan at the kitchen table with them. So I was that kind of person that went to the households and spent some time with the parents. And you know, those were some strong moments because, you know, you had a serious impact, you know, whether it be chasing parents down for that signature on the 21st Century Scholars Program to make sure that kids had a chance to go to college. Yeah. Or just putting together in seventh grade a career plan and in eighth grade revisiting that career plan and seeing if they're still on track or if they want to change it or what are their wishes and wants in life after school. So as a guidance counselor, I got a lot of satisfaction out of that, but nothing tops being a superintendent at Delcom. I mean, I had a great time at Monroe Central, great school board members, but at Delta, there were some things, as you know, that just needed to be addressed from facility wise to inside the classrooms, a safer entrance. I mean, all those things we tackled, and we had this extreme support of the school board. So when you're touching big items like that and you know you're going to have a lasting effect, that allows me to know that those sacrifices of spending time away after school at away events or going, you know, it was all well worth it. I mean, because people believe in you, and once they believe in you, they want to follow you. You can't force people to follow if you're in a leadership position. They got to want to.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is the main role of someone I know you never were a teacher per se, but what would you say is the main role of someone working in education?
I think the most influential teachers out there are the ones who make a strong connection with students, and they're invested, and that student sees that teacher and knows that they're invested in them and they care about them. I think once that's established, that I care about what you're going through, I hear what you're saying, things went bad at home last night, let me get you the right people to talk to. But those educators who really make that commitment and investment to our youth, I think those are the ones that later on in life, when you ask a student who's your favorite teacher, those are the ones that they're going to reach and they're going to remember. Mm-hmm. You know, my favorite teacher was one that was very disciplined, probably because I was disciplined at home. You know, I knew that if I got in trouble at school, I was going to get in trouble at home immediately. It wasn't let me call the school to find out what happened. It was they trusted the teacher, and whatever the teacher said went. And I think we miss that a little bit from a parenting perspective. But the ownership of students' inadequacies, students need to own up to that and be honest with their parents. Mm-hmm. And when you have an educator, and there are so many there, you went through Delta from kindergarten all the way through, you know that there are many, even teachers that you didn't even have in elementary as your homeroom, you knew that, wow, if I didn't have her for my teacher, I'd rather have him or her. They're just good people all around. Uh-huh. And they truly, truly want what's best for students. And I think that's what makes Delcom a special and very unique community, because they care so much.
Mm-hmm. So obviously you were talking about, I mean, you just shared your whole story of how you never thought you were going to be a guidance counselor. You had this vision for your life. So like, what advice would you give to, like, I'm in college right now. I think I know what I want to do, but I don't really know. Like, what advice would you give as a young person is about to go out and try to get a job or find a career?
You know, there's that high moment when you're a senior in high school, when you want to declare where you're going or what you're doing, what your major is going to be. And if you haven't really job shadowed well enough to understand what that job entails, then that's probably a disservice that the school system has done for you. So that first year of college, I'm not going to lie, I wanted to come home several times. Mm-hmm. And it's a tough time.
Yeah.
And if we can, when it's about late junior into senior year, really start hammering the point of time management and setting short-term and long-term goals, I think those are imperative for the success of our kids who leave for higher education. Because if you have already established a short-term of goals, and that could be simple, and have long-term set of goals, then you can keep your focus and keep your attention on those goals instead of the mishaps that come your way that make you homesick. Because God is right there waiting to have a teachable moment with you. And sometimes we get so engrossed in me and what this is going on with me. I really miss home. Sometimes we can get so in depth with that we miss those blessings that God's trying to teach us. And I think that first year is tough. I mean, when you leave the state passing in your senior year, and then you go to a football program and you're sitting on the bench. And I didn't even, I maybe got 3 reps my freshman year, and you're a nobody. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows you. So you go from somebody to nobody. That is a difficult transition, and one that just, you know, you got to have a good support system and a good network that keeps you plugged in, but also keeps you focused on those short-term and long-term goals.
Yeah. Once you actually have a job, what advice would you give to someone who's working already?
You know, even going out in the job market, it's a scary part to be interviewed. It's a scary part on your first day at work, but I think you still have to, at some point, clearly establish some of those. In the next 4 weeks, I want to know this about my work. I want to know that, you know, establishing those goals that you can revisit those, because we're hard on ourselves. Mm-hmm. And if we go into a job somewhat feeling overwhelmed and miss out on the reality of trying to stay focused on, here's what I want to try to accomplish, and my supervisor and my boss, I want to share those goals with them, not to kiss their butt or, you know, butter up to them or any of that, but I need my boss to know what I'm striving for. And if that's not in alignment with what they need from me, he needs to tell me that, or she needs to tell me that, so that I can do better or I can redefine my goals. Mm-hmm. Because those first few weeks, even the first month, I mean, that's a tough reality when you're all of a sudden on your own. Mm-hmm. There's no professor who's got your back anymore.
Yeah.
And my coach Fought always said, if it's meant to be, it's up to me. There's a little bit of that criteria that I've looked at, because I looked at my opportunity, even though it was a God intervention and divine appointment in my professional life. But I looked at it as, I don't ever want somebody to look at me and say, well, he's never been in a classroom, he doesn't know. Yeah. So that drive and motivation triggered something inside of me to become the expert. So there wasn't too many statutory guidelines from the state or the Department of Education that I wasn't aware of. So that drove me to be better, be a better superintendent, and be knowledgeable and be visible, but also allow others to think that I was the expert. You know, Maybe I wasn't, maybe I needed to take a moment and call some people and ask for advice, but that, if it's meant to be, it's up to me. That kind of, and just going in it and working your tail off. I mean, that's just, you know, that's number one by and large.
I love that. If it's meant to be, it's up to me. I've never heard that before.
Yep. That's what Coach Fought. He was, you know, that freshman year, I told you I sat the bench. He always, he would sometimes say, you're sitting so deep on the bench that I'm going to have to feed you with a slingshot. I mean, those are some tough moments.
Yeah.
Or, you know, as a freshman, not knowing this offense as well as you knew your high school offense, and then pausing practice in the middle of everybody, and you had to recite a poem. I threw the ball into the air. It fell to earth. I know not where. And this is why I sit and dream on the bench with the second team. Those tough moments help define me as a character. You know, that's not easy. That's not easy. But I also remember halfway through my freshman season, looking at one of the senior linebackers and saying, one of these days I'm going to own every record here. I did.
Yeah.
Probably 15 years. And that sounds probably a little bit more conceited than anything, but freshman year, you got to try to establish those long-term goals and shoot for them.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to transition away from career and job focus, and we're going to talk about your wife.
Okay.
So how did you meet your wife, Stacy?
Well, I'm going to try to make this one a short one too, but my brother has a friend named Steve Carnes, and Steve asked my brother to take Stacy out and say, hey, would you mind kind of getting us fixed up? So Rick took Stacy to south side of Hartford City at Mason's Drive-In. They got some root beer, and the more he started talking to Stacy, and Stacy went to Blackford, she was 2 years behind me, so I passed her in the hallways. We just never made the connection.
Yeah.
And Rick, instead of focused on fixing his buddy up, he brought Stacy out to the shop where I was working, welding a car back together. Mm-hmm. And there I was in my boots and my jeans and a t-shirt. And she said, according to her, she says the rest was history. But my brother, we had so many, our favorite colors, yellow, colors, yellow, our car, we both wanted a yellow IROC Camaro Z28 growing up. Mm-hmm. We had similar interest, and all of a sudden my brother said, well, instead of fixing Stacy up with Steve, I'm going to fix her up with my brother. So we went out on a date shortly after that. And Stacy is just a small town girl from Montpelier. And our first date, Lexi, was to Red Lobster in Muncie.
Really?
And I get the popcorn shrimp, you know, coming, you know, where I'm coming from here. Mom, Dad didn't have a whole ton of money. Stacy orders rock lobster at market price. So we get the bill, and this is probably not something that I should disclose, but my brother says, "Hey, let's go." So we went to the bathroom and he goes, "We don't have enough money between the two of us to cover this check." And I said, "But this is our first date." And I said, "Well, we could either do dishes or ask them if they have any money." So sure enough, my wife had to go out to her car, to our car, and get her purse, and she helped pay for their first date meal. So very, very embarrassing, but she saw what she was getting into from day one.
That's hilarious. Oh, man. So how did you know that she was the one?
Just the more time we spent together, we just really enjoyed each other's company. When we were together, I didn't know anybody else was around. I mean, she would then start, you know, this is my sophomore year in college when things were going really well and having some good fun baseball and football games. So mom and dad would make sure Stacy got picked up and went to the games. And then, you know, it's just back in that dark time when I came back as an agent and told my agent I was done, that was one thing that I knew that was a solid in my life and I wanted to spend the rest of my life with her. So that's when I proposed to her and she said yes.
Yeah. And how did you propose?
When we were kids growing up, we had three old snowmobiles and we would always go to the people who sold those snowmobiles, their house. They had a little cabin back in the woods and I went and kind of cleaned out that cabin and had a cooler there and the ring was sitting there with some candles and I drove her back there and asked her to marry me.
And how old were you at that time?
I was probably 23, 24.
And then when did you actually get married? What's your anniversary?
September 3rd, 1992.
Oh, wow. So it's coming up.
Coming up. This will be 29.
Oh, my goodness. So obviously, that's been a very long time, 29 years. What would you say has been the key to that successful long marriage that you and your wife have?
One thing for sure, my mom and dad always taught me. I don't know if they shared the same advice with Rick. But just don't ever go to bed mad at each other. You don't want to carry that into the next day. And I would say communication is huge. You know, most of the fights that we've ever had, I can't ever remember. Maybe they were about money just because, you know, I told you I watched my dad work two jobs when I wasn't as a guidance counselor. I'd be over helping dad. And I spent a lot of time in shop growing up too, but we have a lot of likes together. You know, we love to fish and my mom and dad always, even if they didn't have the money, they'd go to the bank to borrow it, but they made sure that we went on a summer vacation and we go to Minnesota every year. So Stacy's been to Minnesota several years with me and we just, you know, at some point in time, you know, that your partner makes you better. Mm-hmm. And she has clearly made me a better person. Maybe growing up, I was probably overly confident and she has humbled me and she has taught me to look at the good in each person and not be so judgmental. And if anybody's going to listen to this and knows Stacy, they would know what I'm talking about because she'll say she doesn't like to talk, but when she's in a room, you know it because she just lights up the room. And she's a happy one. Yeah. She has a definite sense of humor. But, you know, deep down, even going through this cancer, she is strong. I mean, nothing's going to get her down. And she is my rock. And I just know that I wouldn't want to have another day in this life without her.
Mm-hmm. Now we're going to talk about your kids. So you have two children, Ozzy and Zoe. How old were you when you had your first and your last?
So I would have been 24 with Ozzy and 26 with Zoe.
Mm-hmm. And what lesson would you say that you stressed the most to them when they were growing up?
Ooh, probably very similar to what mom and dad, you know, the value of our good day's work. You know, we rebuilt Ozzy and Zoe's first cars. You know, so both of them, you wouldn't think Zoe would help out on rebuilding the 2008 Trailblazer, but she did. Ozzy helped weld his quarter section on his first Grand Prix. So I just, we've tried to, you know, I wanted to raise a daughter that wasn't ever taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to raise a daughter that if any boy tried anything on her against her wishes, I was perfectly fine with her decking him.
Yeah.
And that's, I love Zoe's personality now. It's she is very gracious, tenderhearted, but you know, she's got a strong will about her that she, if she doesn't want to do something, she's not going to do it. And I love that. I love that independence. Mm-hmm. And Ozzy is, and as much, you know, probably highlights of our lives with our kids. Zoe, if I don't know if you know, she's an incredible singer.
Mm-hmm. I've heard.
And in second grade, she took over the talent show. I mean, she sang Jesus Pick Me Up and Put Me Down on Solid Ground. And I mean, it was done after that, after she sang. I mean, it was so incredible. So all those moments of church, hearing her sing and seeing God work through her were truly, truly blessings to Stacy and I, because we knew that she was following the talents that was provided to her from God, you know. And Ozzy's that Jesus that if you offer my cheek to slap on my right, I'm going to offer my left. He's a tenderhearted young man who knows how to work hard. But back to him, he had an exceptional talent. Truly, truly, truly wish that he would have had a chance to play for either your dad or somebody like Coach New, who mm-hmm. really, back to that investment. You know, Tom Brady, one time I saw a quote that he had that said, true confidence comes when you know you have the trust from your coaches. And I don't think Ozzy probably ever had that in college. He was always on edge, and to have an opportunity to play for a Mike New, where I know that he's positive. He's a positive guy.
Yeah.
And he is changing the culture there. And so I just, you know, to see my kids, we've just asked them to be polite, be respectful, honor your elders for sure, and try to do the right thing.
And do you have any particularly funny stories from when your kids were little that stick out to you?
Ozzy always liked catching fish, so he would just get so excited. But with Ozzy, I would say a fun moment was coming back from IPFW when I was working for my master's, and when I would come through the door, Zoe wasn't born yet, but he would like look like he was riding a motorcycle, and he'd get so excited to see me. And especially when it was Monday night, because of Monday night football. So I would lay down on the floor and my right arm on my right side, and he would put his head right here and he would fall asleep watching Monday night football with me. So that was a fun time. And then Zoe, just so many of those moments. She probably drove 10,000 miles on a go-kart. That was her cup of tea. If she wasn't singing, she was in a go-kart. And if we're flying to go to Disney, she's pushing buttons, pushing those vents, those lights, pushing all the time. So her hands are always in everything. I'm so tickled to death that she's teaching at Delta Middle School. She loves her job, and I think her kids love her too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. What would you say is the most rewarding part about being a parent?
It's probably come back twofold a little bit, because as a parent, you can't be their best friend. You still have to be that authoritative. And now that they're raised, I love the fact that they still call and ask for advice. So now we're like getting to that best friend stage, you know, so there's still respect there. And, you know, I never want to call them and then look at their phone and think, oh, it's dad. I don't think they do that. Maybe they do. I don't know, but I love the fact that they still call and they still want to be a part of us. Zoe got married last October, and I think her and her husband have spent more time in our house on a nightly basis, just because we are so close and so tight. So I love the fact that we can talk to our kids about anything, even to this day.
And do you have any parenting advice that you would give to parents trying to raise their kids right now?
Oh man, that's a scary thing. When you leave the hospital, it's like war zone, right? I mean, we're bringing this baby home. But that first child, it feels like you're like overparenting sometimes, and you're like, you could probably promote careers with those overparenting things, but sometimes just relax and let them fail. That's a hard thing to do. But through failure, you learn. So yeah, I just not being their best friends until later in life, and knowing that discipline. I think when the Bible says spare the rod, spoil the child, I think there's truth in that. And parenting isn't easy, because it's not easy watching a kid fail, and you want to step in. But sometimes the best thing you can do is just step back and let them learn from that situation.
And what would the Reese of today tell himself as a young husband and father? So if you could go back and give yourself a piece of advice, if that would be possible, what would it be?
Not work so hard in the shop. Like I told you, I did my day. But financially, we probably need it. But just sometimes chill out, you know, and don't overparent. Let things roll. Let a disagreement be a disagreement and fix it on their own. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So more about chilling out, because I was probably too involved and too disciplinary.
Sounds like my dad sometimes. Oh, man. So moving on to some just like random questions, but so over the last 20 years or so, you've been inducted into two of your alma mater's Hall of Fames, Franklin College in 2002 and Blackford High School in 2010. I'm assuming it was for sports, right?
Yep, for athletes.
Like, go into more depth of like what exactly they were for, and then could you tell us how those occurrences made you feel?
Yeah, so the Blackford High School Hall of Fame hasn't been going very long. Probably 8 years ago they started it up, and Chris Landis, who used to be the athletic director at Monroe Central, he's also a newspaper writer. Okay. So probably 10 years ago, he started a big article each week that would rate previous athletes of Blackford, and he would rate them, the top 100. And since 1973, the start of Blackford High School, I was number 7 on that list. Not sure how he came up with that, probably throwing all that basketball, baseball, and football into it, but yeah, I mean, those are tremendous accomplishments, but it almost makes you feel guilty, because you know that you didn't get there alone. You know, there's no way you could throw to the receivers without the line, you know. So when you accept those kind of things, you really want your buddies and everybody to be there around you that help make that happen. And there is a tremendous amount of guilt. I mean, you're truly satisfied and you're appreciative and you're honored, but more than that are, wow, I didn't do this alone.
Yeah.
You know, other people deserve it much more than I do. They just didn't get the statistics to support that, you know? So humbling opportunities, great plaques on the wall. Got a little headshot there at Franklin with my ugly mug on a bronze thing, but you know, it is what it is. And I'm thankful for that, but also I know that God gave me some ability, and hopefully I honored him by pushing forward and trying as hard as I could to be the best person and athlete and student that I could be. But honestly, it comes down to accepting those awards on behalf of all your coaches and all your players that help get there.
Well, I think you have honored him. So I know you're asked to do a lot of public speaking engagements frequently. A lot was through your job, obviously, and I've been there to witness several. And one in particular is the graduation commencement speeches. I love how you always give a song to the class. It's kind of like a roadmap for the years to follow. So I was just curious, like, if you had to choose a song that you would say like would most accurately depict like how you like see and like try to guide your life, like what would it be and why?
You know, I really did like that one from Darius Rucker a few years ago, you know, doing things for the first time, you know, don't be so worried about it. As a family perspective motto, I love Dolly Parton and Ricky Van Shelton, rocking chairs, rocking babies. Mm-hmm. That would probably define Stacy and I's relationship. We love a front porch and we love rocking. So when we think of our grandbabies and getting bigger family, that really, I love that song. Mm-hmm. But I was always, you know, an AC/DC kind of a motivator in the locker room. But now I'm just like, I listen to a lot of Lauren Daigle and I will rescue you. The first thing I do is thank God for another day. And then I go through those things that I've shared with you too, that you've heard before. I trust my body. I trust my doctors and I love God. And then I put my old cell phone on Pandora and speaker and I jump in the shower and just listen to Lauren Daigle and have some quiet moment with God. And for every 1 minute that we spend talking to God and asking him to hold people up, we need to spend 4 minutes listening. So that resonates in my heart tremendously, that I want to be a blessing for others. In our last, you know, Stacy and I went to a soccer game on Tuesday because they had a kick for cure and they wanted us to say a few things. And just so happened in my devotions that I've been reading Jesus Calling by Sarah Young, there was a point in there where have faith in everything that you do. Trust God in all things that you do, because the more we trust in him, we are developing our trusting muscles. Mm-hmm. And when you think of muscles as an athlete, repetitive movements, whether it be on the tennis courts, swinging that racket,
yeah,
or in the weight room, picking up that weight and trying to build bulk. The more that we trust God in every day and all those things that we do and honor him and bring recognition to him, we are building our trust muscles. So the stronger our trust muscles are, the more adaptive we can be when those trials and tribulations and moments of adversity that come our way. And that's not for me. I'm just a vessel. I'm just somebody that's, you know, that really set well in my heart. And I trust in the Lord in all the things that I do.
I've never heard that before. I love that.
Yep. Trusting muscles. I love it.
Mm-hmm. So 2020 was obviously a year that caused hardships for everyone in the world in some way, shape, or form. And for you, I know that this was also the year that you unfortunately received your cancer diagnosis in November. Would you mind explaining what the process of discovering this news was like?
Absolutely. You know, I wasn't feeling that good last September, but Zoe getting married in October, I just figured I'd wait, you know, and go get things taken care of after her wedding. And then that's when they found out that I had, you know, a liver issue and bile duct issue and a spleen issue. So in November, when the doctor called us in and said, hey, I thought it was going to be a lymphatic cancer, which we probably could have cured, but instead it's bile duct cancer. And it's definitely a rarity in itself. And really can't tell you how you got it. And, you know, he saw the hurt on Stacy's face. And, you know, me, I guess I go through life as a quarterback. It just doesn't matter what kind of news I get. I have to maintain my presence and maintain my composure in everything that I do. But the doctor looked at us and said, do you care if I pray with you? And to have a physician say that, that was just remarkable. Yeah. To us. So from that moment forward, we never questioned going up to Mayo or going to Cleveland Clinic or doing anything different. You know, we knew that we had the trust in him, and he would call me on a Saturday morning on my cell phone and say, hey, I woke up thinking about you and I think we need to get you back in here for some blood work. Can you come in today? You know, and that's that kind of care. Has Dr. Carr out of Fort Wayne Lutheran, he's just an incredible human being who really invests in his patients, you know, much like the investment of educators to students. He truly wants what's best for you. So in that amount of time, he sent me to IU Med Center. And that's when someone with maybe not the same kind of bedside manners looked at me and said, typically you have 1 to 2 years to live. There's numbers. So there had to be averages. So there may be some people with 5 years. And to this day, you know, a week ago, I had last Thursday, the 19th, I had the second radiation treatment. So I've been through chemo, been through radiation, and now I'm just on a daily basis. I try to keep my updates kind of positive, you know, but I looked at Stacy and I said, you know how long it's been since I felt good, you know? So it was devastating news, but I think back to my faith and everything that I have, I know that God's going to prevail.
Yeah.
And maybe he has called me for a purpose, and that purpose being expanding his kingdom through maybe living testimonies. I don't know, but I'm willing to do whatever I can. And that's why when you sent me an interview request, it was like, heck yes, no problem. As long as she doesn't mind me talking a little bit about the Lord and my relationship with him. So I knew you didn't. And I knew that would be great. And you, according to Zoe, have a pretty significant following too. So maybe there's some words today that would resonate on some people's hearts. And it's not from Reese. It's just I'm being a vessel. I'm just relaying the message. So I'm not going to take credit for it. I'm just repeating what's been laid on my heart.
Well, you're doing a good job at repeating it. So from the time you were diagnosed until today, there have been several initiatives put on from our community to show their love and support for you. For example, prayer walks around your house, videos made, the slogan Man Up, t-shirts, all this stuff. How does it feel to know that you are so loved and appreciated within this community?
Oh boy, that's probably when, if there's a time of emotional levels of high moments, it's during that. I mean, Lexi Steele, I mean, you wouldn't believe the number of cards that I get on a daily basis, and that's uplifting. And more importantly, it kind of makes me feel better that as a leader, that people like me, you know, and that means a lot to me. I think they saw how hard I worked, and that made it easier whenever there was an element of change that would bring to them and maybe their teaching conditions or whatever. But the incredible amount of support from families and parents and students. I mean, when Detweiler sent me a text and said, do you care if we start this Man Up thing? And to see where that went from New Pal to Mississinewa to you guys putting together a YouTube video with wrestlers and tennis players and hitting into that fence with Man Up. I mean, I really, that's when my sensitivity is overfloweth, and I don't know that there's anything that I could ever do or say to let people know how much I appreciate it, other than just saying, thank you. You have made a difference in my life.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. I know that's probably difficult for you to speak about as well. So we only have a few more questions. We're getting to the end here. As you look back on your life thus far, who are the people who have influenced you or impacted you the most?
Ooh, by far, my mom and dad, 100%. You know, their influence on hard work and being truthful and just being a good person and respectful is one thing. But the sacrifices that I was able to witness from them to give us, you know, and I have to throw my brother in there too. He is everything to me. Mm-hmm. He said it. in 2015, he had a piece of a cancer growth in his pelvis. So he's had a surgery and he's full and clear and in remission. But now he knows that as a patient going through cancer is one thing, but being a brother, a sister, or a friend to support someone else who's going through it is another. And he has definitely tried to bless me in any shape or way, from financially to spiritually to conditionally. I mean, offering to fly me up to Minnesota so it's not such a heavy 14-hour drive on my body. He is an amazing individual. And the Bible tells us that we have friends. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. And my brother is helping me get through this adversity. And he wants everything that we do together. He is enjoying, and he brings forth great light into my life that I can see things and not, you know, there's some dark moments when days and you just don't feel good. I mean, you just stay in bed and there's just no relief. And to have a text from him or a phone call from him is very uplifting. And he was that kind of brother that if we went through McDonald's and he only had a dollar, he would make sure I got the Big Mac and he got nothing. You know, that's just who my brother is. Mm-hmm. And he blesses people and he encourages people and he uplifts people. But I'd have to throw my grandma Mann in there, my dad's mother, Martha. She was a 12th woman hired at Fisher Body in Marion. It's a GM factory. And the toughness that went with that, you can imagine what she went through. But she would always, if mom and dad were picking up Stacy for a football game or a baseball game, she was always there and she wouldn't say much, but we knew we were loved and she loved watching us play. And, you know, I've had several friends. I talked about Shane Robbins' influence. I wouldn't be a superintendent today if he wouldn't have encouraged me. And Roger Spaulding, we had some moments on, you know, his wife Laura is going through some things right now with cancer and he went to Wright State to play baseball, but we were right there at Blackford playing several moments. And then Kevin Mahan, he's been a true friend, just a tremendous blessing. We've made commitments together. You can imagine being raised by a state policeman that we just would never do drugs. We'd never smoke dope that's just who we are. And that path from all of us that brings us together and we're awful tight and very thankful for friends and fellowship and my brother. And I've mentioned it before, but Stacy truly, truly is my strength. And she's helping me more through this moment of adversity with dealing with cancer than anything. And Zoe, she bought me a dog. She said, "Dog, Dad, this Bernedoodle, half Bernese Mountain Dog and half Poodle is going to heal you." So my kids, Ozzy and Zoe, you don't think you could get strength from your kids, but you do because you want to press forward for them. As I said Tuesday night to the soccer players, I don't feel like I'm in a fight with cancer because I know God's doing that fight. I just need to trust him.
Would you say that you have a favorite memory or time period of your life?
Ooh, my life has been awful good. You know, we had some success in college. I really love playing baseball. We had a good group of baseball players when we go on spring break. It was fun. Mm-hmm. Had a really good coach. The kids, when they were born, that was just a fantastic moment. Fearful, scary thing, but just totally awesome. I couldn't imagine anything better. And as we get, we hope we get wiser, but, you know, even this time, I'm enjoying it. Mm-hmm. I get to share my intimacy with God to others. He says, if we draw nearer to him, he'll draw nearer to us. And I think I was a strong Christian before my diagnosis, but now I can't live without that. And that's in my daily routine. And I'm hopeful that others may find that routine. And there's times when you don't feel good and you might not feel like reading too much of the scripture, but that's what devotions are there to have a pick me up. So I've enjoyed life. I don't have any regrets. Absolutely zero. Maybe spending more time with the kids growing up instead of the shop, working so hard, but that's all I knew, you know, work hard and life will be okay.
So what advice would you give to my generation?
Well, I think the ways that you handle adversity need to define not only your character, but your future. I don't think you can keep up with the statistics of today when you're talking career paths, because I think I've read somewhere where a graduating college senior is going to change careers maybe 2 times and maybe jobs 9 times. So that commitment and loyalty and dedication, you know, just kind of think about your teachers that you experienced going through in your journey and how many left along that way. You know, you just don't have that superintendent that sticks around for 25 years. You don't have that teacher that sticks around for 35 or 40 years. Some are still there. You know, I think Olmsted, what'd he get? 41 years before he gave it up. I mean, so I think my generation probably put too much on professional careers and hard work, that I would suggest not losing sight of having fun and just having good quality family time, you know, because you've experienced it from travel to travel sports to dance to whatever the case may be. We live in a busy time when parents, we're lucky. I'm looking at my dinner table. My mom and dad made sure we sat down every night at that dinner table. It didn't matter if it was 9 o'clock. Yeah. We sat down and had a meal together. And I think that's a disconnect just because of the busyness of today. It's tough to do that. And the quality of life, you know, I want to be known for being there for people. I don't want to be known as just a hard worker.
Yeah.
So don't get discouraged on changing jobs. That's okay. Just use that as an opportunity to be better in your next time. And I think goals, setting those and defining those are tremendous, and then reevaluating them. Mm-hmm. Also, because that gives you a sense of accomplishment that surpasses a lot of turmoil or a lot of bad evaluations from your boss or supervisor. But it also helps define you and what you want to do later in life. And think about it. I didn't become a superintendent until I was probably 42. So that was my favorite job in life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know I wanted to be one.
Yeah.
So I think there's a little bit of truth. When one door shuts, another door opens. I didn't let IPFW director that second year hand deliver my application. He wasn't going to tell me no. I wasn't going to leave without him saying yes. Be persistent and have confidence in your ability and know that you've been well trained in your high school educational journey. And now that you're at DePaul, you're going to be even more so. So that confidence and knowing the right people and the right situation will help determine a lot of success, but a lot of it is determined by the ability that you set and define what you want in your life too.
Thank you for that. What do you believe is the most important thing in life?
I would say feeling good about yourself. You know, each day at my nightly prayer, sometimes I fall asleep before I say amen, but I really try to go through my day and think, what could I have done better? Who could I have responded to in a nicer way? Maybe as I was a grouch for the day, maybe the next upcoming day I can do better. So I think when you feel good about who you are and when you look in that mirror, you don't have any regrets. Those are turmoils and unwelcomed negative thoughts that you don't have to deal with. So just avoid them. Continue to make good decisions and feel good about yourself and call mom and dad every now and then and tell them you love them. Because honestly, if it weren't for them, we wouldn't be where we are today. And that's just, I know I know there may be some listeners on this that while they had a tougher growing up and their mom and dad were gone, but grandma and grandpa were there and aunt and uncle were there. But ultimately, we have to give credit where credit's due. And yeah. We are defined and we are who we are today because of who helped define us. And that's our parents or our guardians.
And you have one more question. You've done so well. Thank you again for taking the time to do this. So what do you hope to be remembered by?
That I made things better. You know, John Adams, a school board member, and I have had that conversation several times. And he said, you know, I just want to, whenever I'm done being a school board member, I want people I want to feel personally that I made things better. And also want others to realize that decisions that he made as a board member made things better. And I think you can sit back and look and take great value in that from him. But I think more importantly is Shane Robbins has a very unique skill that when you leave a conversation with him, you feel better. And I don't know that I have that, but I also want people to know that they can count on me. I want people to know that I do listen. I'm just not a one-way communicator. And you can judge that by just sitting back and observing. That's not a counseling technique that I learned. I mean, silence is a deadly weapon. But when you just sit back and watch a conversation take place and just watch to see who's interrupting who when they're talking, I think I want to be known as a good listener, not just a good talker.
Yeah,
I want people to know that they take great trust in me and they would go to work for me, you know? So what I would want people to know me as is a good Christian man who loved the Lord and loved his family. And those were top priorities. You probably remember Jeff George spent some time together when he was trying to come back. And he was like, Reese, he said, I really thought I had it figured out until I established a good relationship with the Lord. And until I put faith, family, and football in that order, I was out of line. And I think we have to establish those priorities in our life to move forward.
That's it. Unless you have anything else you want to talk about, but you did so well. Thank you so much for, taking an hour out of your day, and I'm sure you probably aren't feeling great. So
it's a good day. It's actually a good day. Now I get to go spend time with that dog that Zoe says is going to heal me. Thank you for the opportunity. Words of wisdom. I don't know if that would be nice to be known as a wise person, but I don't,
you definitely are a wise person.
I got that 3.9 as just working my absolute tail off. Not to say that's who I was. I can't thank you and Delcom's community enough for all the support. Mm-hmm. I love you all very, very much.
Well, we all love you.
I'll be praying for you that you have an awesome week.
Thank you so much. You as well.
All right. Have a good day. Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Reese Mann, an impeccable listener, a humble leader, and an extremely hard worker. Reese quoted the phrase, "If it's meant to be, it's up to me." And after hearing his story, it's clear that Reese has lived his life with that mentality. Reese tells us that in life, the order should always be faith first, family second, and in his case, football third. And in all that Reese does, this is shown. For after each accomplishment he spoke of in this episode, he always credited God for giving him the ability. Reese is going through a difficult time right now, but despite this, he says that he is using this time to be a vessel of God's word. As a man who hopes to be remembered as someone who made things better, I, and many, can attest that he has.
How are you doing though?
I'm good. How's your Sunday going?
Good, good. Restful.
Restful's good. That's right.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to look at the questions?
Yeah, we looked through them. I had to ask Stacy how old I was when we had Ozzy and Zoe, so.
Sounds like my dad. My dad doesn't remember that stuff either.
No, that's a male for you.
Oh, yeah. All All right. Well, thank you so much for doing this, though. Really.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy doing these, and I just think you are a very wise individual, so you would be perfect.
Well, I told Zoe what was happening today, and she said, man, she is all over. She's posting all kinds of these podcasts. She's a stud. She's really good at it.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
Should be fine. Just talking all about you. So.
Thanks for letting me tell my story.